Elliot Friedman. Up and at him early this morning after the morning after the night before, Elliot. God.
How are you, Scotty? You okay?
You know,
I'm taking care of him this morning.
I think, Elliot.
Oh, Mike, your therapy self is very important.
I think the next bumper song from commercial break is Comfortably Numb by Pink Floyd. I'm numb. I mean, I don't. What do you make of last night's game, Elliot? And if it happens to any other team in any other market, I'm sure they're talking about it and they're frustrated. But we all sit here and we understand that this picks at some wounds that, at the very least, we had hoped in this town had begun to scab over.
I got a lot of good texts last night from friends who grew up in Toronto who were fans, and there were great lines. It was everything from "the torture never ends" to congratulations to Nick Robertson, who learned the elation and the crushing disappointment that comes with being a Toronto Maple Leaf or a fan. The thing about it to me was we were sitting there in the second period, and I actually said it in the second intermission, how they looked like they were really starting to go. The second period, they were moving the puck through the Columbus zone. Their best players, they looked really confident. And you were sitting there, I mean, I know I was, and we were talking about it together, just saying that, boy, they're moving the puck against Columbus so nicely. And it just came to a sudden halt. The switch flipped, and you know, BX has said it really well, what it was like as a player when the momentum turns on you and you just can't stop it, and how you're sitting there with no explanation as to why this just occurred. And, it brings back the memories, whether you want to go Boston 2013 or wherever you want to go, like a three-goal lead, everything going so well. And then it just turns, and you're sitting there and saying, "What just happened? How did we get here?" And last night was one of those nights. You know, I thought they were really starting to go well, and it just turned. And you know, Anderson too, he made some unbelievable saves. Like it could have been 5-3 Columbus in regulation, but Anderson made a couple of huge saves, got them to overtime. I thought they'd regroup, and I was really interested in what Keith had to say. You could sense his disappointment, obviously, in what he said. I didn't think they were as bad as he made them out to be, but, you know, he's the coach and I'm not.
I got a lot of texts last night about the Dermott pinch and maybe the Riley kind of hanging in the offensive zone a little bit too long on the overtime winner. The way I saw them was Kapanen, just when you fill as a forward, you have to take the puck or the man. And I think Tavares, when you're an F3 like that, you can't lose the puck in that situation. What did you make of either of those plays?
You know, I got a lot. I asked a bunch of people about the Dermott pinch, and a lot of people I asked, and you know, I'm talking, you know, I'm texting like, you know, coaches, a couple players.
Yeah,
they agreed with you, Mike. They thought that Kapanen was as responsible as Dermott as that one. You see, you know, any time a defenseman pinches, it's almost like it's the defenseman's fault, right? And the interesting thing about it is, Toronto's playing a team that is totally the test case for that, because guys like Jones and Werenski, they're allowed to do whatever they want. And mm-hmm. Tortorella makes it very clear the responsibility is on everyone else to make sure if those guys go that they're covered up for. Like there were times last night Gavrikov was leading the rush, basically. And that's Columbus's way. And no one's going to blame those guys. You know, you remember the 2-0 goal in game two. You know, their D got caught off ice and Tavares got the breakaway. I didn't hear too many people blaming their D. You know, their forwards are responsible for making sure those guys are covered for. So I don't have as much of a problem with Dermott on that one. I think a lot of that was on Kapanen. The Riley one, you know, that was the interesting thing to me about Keith's comment, because Riley the whole night was all over the ice. And, you know, we were kind of watching it to the point where when we were talking about it, Mike, and saying, boy, Riley's really up there. Boy, he's really deep. And even when it was 3-3 late, he was deep. And we kind of all came to the conclusion that must be what they want, because he was doing it so often. You know, it wasn't like he did it once and then stopped. He just kept on doing it. So we were like, oh, okay, it must be like a Jones-Werenski thing. They must want him to play like that. And then, but it just made me wonder what Keith said after the game about the way they played and they had no plan and didn't play with a plan. This is just me talking, Mike, but I wonder if that's what he was talking about.
Elliot Friedman, our guest on Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So they play tonight, game four, and then if they win, they play Sunday night, game five, and then anything's up for grabs here. If they don't win, Elliot, we're doing the dissection of the return to play, and I guess the broader season Monday morning, and we're also looking ahead to the second phase of the draft lottery on Monday night. I mean, we could be conceivably waking up on Tuesday morning to the news that Alex Lafreniere is a future Maple Leaf. I mean, this could go in a bunch of different directions, but we are where we are now. And this series, to my mind, has played out in a not so dissimilar fashion to the way that the 70 or so regular season games did, where you get a bit of a meh in game one. Off of that effort, you get the consummate bounce back. And I laid out a variety of examples yesterday morning and the morning before of examples that from this very regular season where the Leafs, I don't want to say game one was a turd, because that's not a fair assessment of the game, but that they have a tendency to bounce back from average at best efforts. And game two was a prime example of that. And we thought that they'd build off of game two, and they didn't. And well, that has...
Scott, like I said, I disagree. I thought the second period last night was really good. I thought they were in great shape last night.
Well, they were. And then they weren't.
Like I said it in the second intermission, their best players were really going. Like they were taking the puck right through Columbus. Like Marner, Tavares, Matthews, Riley, all their best players, Kerfoot, they were having great shifts against that Columbus team. They were cutting right through them. That's what made last night so surprising to me, is that, you know, it looked like, for lack of a better term, they were figuring out Columbus. So, you know, I have to ask you, the conscience of Leaf Nation.
How do I feel about tonight?
No. Like, what's worse, winning tonight and losing Sunday, or do you just want it over with tonight?
Well, I'll let the cat out of the bag. I don't, back-to-back third and fourth, four nights, fourth and six nights, I don't see it happening tonight. I would have preferred a 6-0 loss last night, and then you got to buck up and play. I think last night's loss is completely and totally demoralizing for this hockey team. And I hope, Elliot, I hope I'm wrong.
I really hope I'm wrong. You are a true Leaf fan, because I think that's probably the majority opinion. Here's the thing. You know, I actually think that the way this sets up gives them the best possible chance to recover. Number one, you play right away. You're not dwelling on this. You turn around quickly. You don't have to sit there for at least 24 hours and talk about it. And number two, and this is purely a theory, and I could be totally wrong, but I think, as I said last night in the post game, I think the bubble setup helps them. Because if it was a regular setup, you got to do your media last night, and then you got to do your media again today, and it's a day off, and you maybe have to do your media again tomorrow morning. You know, you don't have to see anyone. You're just with your team. You know, there's still the social media aspect of it. It depends if you're disciplined enough to stay off it. But I think being in the bubble, not being with, quote-unquote, the general public, and the turnaround fast, I think it's the best possible way for them to, you know, clear their minds and play. Now, that all depends on exactly what you just said. Can they get off the hangover quick and forget about it in turn? The guy they're playing against tonight, Tortorella, he always says, on a good team, there's no such thing as momentum in the playoffs. And I've heard him say it many times, and he talks about how good teams, it's one game out of seven, or in this particular case, one game out of five. And that's the way you have to be. Good teams see it like that. What happened? The game's in the books. It's over. You move on to the next game. I think to me, the most fascinating thing about tonight is, you know, how do they play different? Like when Keefe says they didn't have a plan, what does he look like and say, I want them to change? That to me is the big question. And then there, when you talk about the Lafreniere lottery, it's hilarious. I mean, you know, one thing I was talking about, I can't remember what I was talking about, maybe it was Jeff. What's the biggest outrage factor? Like, what's going to make people the angriest? He ends up where? And I think Toronto's probably about third on that list.
Yeah. Yeah.
With Pittsburgh and Edmonton being above?
Yeah, I think Edmonton's according to the Jeff Merrick outrage rankings, Edmonton is one and Pittsburgh is two and Toronto is three.
I don't know. I think if he goes to Toronto,
I'm already prepared for the allegations of a fix and all that, which is, I just don't buy that. I mean, Edmonton had so many first overall picks. How can you say it's fixed?
Well, this is the conspiracy theory generation, right? So everything's like that.
You're saying how I like the fact that Toronto's going to get right back at it today, and I agree with a lot of what you said, just not having to do all the media scrums and Zoom calls and get right back at it. But what do you think? I think I get two dozen messages a day on what's missing with this team. Why can't they close out these games? It's too much skill. They need more role players. And I don't even know if that's it. The other side is that it's our coach needs to be harder on guys. I get in a lot of those too. I don't think this is on the coaching staff at this point. They have the leadership. They have the skill. The main four, they've got games under their belt now. What's the biggest problem going on? Is it the depth for you? Is it the salary cap or they can't make any more moves? Can't add anybody? What's it for you, Elliot?
You know, that's a great question, Mike. I was thinking about this a lot on the drive home last night from the studio to my place and just, you know, thinking, you know, what is it? And it just seems really quickly, Mike, that we've gone from the promise of this team to how much longer does this group have? Like, to me, it just seems like yesterday, that night they beat Pittsburgh when Anderson got hurt and McElhinney won the game and they made the playoffs and, you know, they lost to Washington in a really hard-fought series. And everybody was like, wow, like this team's going to grow and the window's going to be a long time. And, you know, all these guys are going to grow together and, you know, we're going to have a chance at something. Like Leaf fans were so excited that year they made the playoffs that first time. And now, you know, after the two series against Boston, both of which they could have won, and now this game against Columbus tonight, and maybe the game against Columbus on Sunday, it certainly does feel, Mike, as if we're suddenly at a referendum of what this group can do. Mm-hmm. And I always believed, because of the weirdness of the year, that that this was not going to be the end for this group, that they would have to make a couple of changes, but I thought they would be maybe peripheral changes as opposed to major structural changes. I don't think it's like Dubas to panic. I think he believes in this group. I think he believes in his quote-unquote core four. And my belief is that he looked at this year and next year as years for them to prove that they could do it together. But there's no question that if, you know, they lose and game three is uppermost in anyone's mind, you know, there's going to have to be some hard conversations. I do feel like that game last night, you know, it's fresh in our minds. It's easy to react as forcefully as everybody is. They have a chance to erase it. If they win two games, we all know that Scotty is going to lead the charge to a much happier mood on Monday morning, Sunday night. But, I mean, you have to win those two games, right? They're, yeah. You know, I think the thing about Dubas is I really think he tries not to overreact to things like last night. I think he tries to look at it as we lose or we learn. Like, we win or we learn. I think that's what he tries to look
and Elliot,
at. Like.
Elliot, that's good, except he can't Chinese farmer explain this one away. I mean, this... I keep coming back. This is the trend with this team. So
well, I think, Scotty, that's why, as I said, it certainly feels like we've come a long way in a short time. When you go back to that Washington series, like, I agree with you. I think this, after what happened last night, it adds a lot of extra pressure on this team. Like, people think that sometimes we overreact, whether it's the public or the media. I don't know if that's true all the time. Sometimes I think it is. But I think when you have a game like that, like, that's your fan base. And, you know, you talked about it, Scotty. You expect a certain amount of torture, right? But I do think that, although it's, like I said, Dubas's mantra, I think, in these situations is win or learn. And I think he tries to be very calm. But it does feel like, whether it's this year or next year, we're getting to the point where this group's going to have to prove it.
Well, yeah, and the blanket term is inconsistency, however it is one wants to define that, Elliot. But if he's going to bring this group, we can't talk like they're dead. They could win tonight and win Sunday. Mm-hmm. I understand that. But if they don't win this series and he brings the group back relatively the same, he'll have some money to play with because Tyson Berry likely isn't coming back, et cetera, et cetera. But if the majority of the group does return and it plays through inconsistent periods again next year, is he counting on them growing out of this? Or, like, at some point they are what they are as a group. They're uber talented, but at some point they are what they are as a group.
Yes, well, and I think we're getting close to that point. The one thing I will say, Scott, is that I think a lot about Washington. When they won the Cup in 2018, how many times did we give up the Capitals for dead?
Well, we even had them pass their window.
Yeah, the year before... We were talking, would Washington trade Ovechkin? And then they won the Cup. Now, so I always believe you bet on talent. That's the way I look at it. But like I said, and I said it a couple of times already, it does appear that at the very least, we're getting to the referendum on this group. Maybe it's this weekend.